Welcome to the LeanZone.com podcast, where we discuss construction contracts, liens, and bonds. And now, our host, Alex Barthet.
So again, my name is Alex Barthet. We're going to go over some construction contract issues. So what are the most important contract terms that you need to be aware of? So the first sounds simple, but you'd be surprised how many people don't do it, is get it in writing, is to have a written agreement. List the exclusions and assumptions that make up your price, scope, and time. So if you understand that there are certain things that have to happen for you to do your work, and that's not part of your scope, you're not going to provide that, you need to make sure that that's part of how you define what you're going to do, because without that, you run the risk that the contractor comes back and says, well, you said you were going to do X. The contract didn't say that I had to do anything. Because one of the things you have to remember is that when you look at these contracts that the GCs give you, it's 30 pages of obligations on you and either nothing or almost nothing as far as obligations on them. So it's not reciprocal. There's not a place in a standard agreement where you can point to and say, but you were supposed to do this. Because in most of these contracts, it doesn't say anything. There are no obligations for the contractor. So unless you actively put them in the form of exclusions to the scope of your work or assumptions about things that are going to happen before you can do your work, you don't have the ability contractually to argue with the contractor and say, well, I couldn't do my work because of these things that were in my way. They'll say, that's not what our contract says. So these are things that you and everybody else in the industry has to deal with, because it's what all of the big GC contracts say. And unless you push back on them and make changes to the agreement, you are effectively at their mercy. Amazingly, people don't understand, you know, they perceive incorrectly that if they are not paid, if you are not paid, you can stop work. All of the contracts that you sign say the exact opposite. They say that you have to keep working even if we don't pay you, even if you have a dispute with change order work, with the schedule, that your recourse is to proceed with the dispute resolution process in your contract, which typically means maybe you have a meeting of executives, maybe you go to mediation, maybe you have to file a lawsuit, but you can't stop working. Now, just think about that for a minute, right? You're not getting paid. You've got men in the field. You've got materials that you're delivering, and you can't stop. That's a very difficult position to be in for any business. So one of the things we advise all of our clients to do is to push back not only on the pay when paid provision, but to include what we would call a stop work provision. And I wrote just a simple one here. Subcontractor can slow or stop work without liability or penalty if it has not been paid its draw request in 30 days after submission. Pretty straightforward, but unless you actively include something like that in your contract with these big GCs, you can't stop working. So your cash, you effectively become the bank for that job, you and all the other subs. I'm not sure if you were fully aware of the fact that that's what's in those 30 pages. And that's why responding with changes in the form of an addendum to the contract becomes so important. If you put yourself in the position of having to fund the operation during the course of a dispute, not only are you paying labor and materials, but now you have to hire a lawyer, you have to file suit. I mean, it gets very expensive. We're going to talk a little bit later about the myth that some people have about, well, the job is bonded, so we're okay. We can always make a bond claim, and I'm going to explain to you why that is a very false sense of security as far as the ability to get paid.
This episode is brought to you by the Construction Lawyers Alliance, a network of the top construction lawyers from around the country. At ConstructionLawyersAlliance.com, you can search construction law topics in nearly every state. Visit ConstructionLawyersAlliance.com to find the construction law answers you are looking for and a seasoned construction lawyer that can assist you.
The other thing you have to remember is that most contracts use the term reasonably inferable as far as the definition of your scope of work. And what that means is that not only are you obligated for what you have, what's actually in the plans and in your contract, but anything that's reasonably inferable from it. And what that means in the law is that if it wasn't actually in the plans, but a reasonable person would assume that you would provide that as part of your scope of work, then even though you didn't price it, even though you didn't expect to provide it, now you contractually have to give it to them. A good example is something that happened to us not too long ago. We represented a developer who was building a school, and the architect left off the plans all of the thermostats for the air conditioning units in the entire school. Now, not only did the electrical engineer miss it, the mechanical engineer, the architect, and the contractor who priced it, but now all the drywall's up, all the units are in, and there's no way to control any of the AC units, right? So we went back to the contractor and said, it's reasonably inferable that if I'm putting in air conditioning units, I'm gonna need to be able to control them. So it was about a $15,000 item, and the contractor had to eat it. So be aware that there may be things beyond what you actually price that become part of your scope of work. Now, one of the best ways to limit that is to try to limit the plan pages that you incorporate by reference into your contract. That was, you know, it referenced a door, you should have known that you needed to provide it. So one of the best ways to push back on that is to exclude from your contract, by the way, not just your quote, but the actual contract, the plan pages that you didn't base your price off of. Now the contractor wants to push back and say, every page is part of your contract, whether you priced it or not. Where we see clients make mistakes is they say, well, I gave you a quote against plan pages, A to B, but then when you get the contract, it references all of the plan pages. The fact that it was in your quote, or I should say left off your quote, but it's now in the contract is a problem for you. The other thing we see is the revision date. We've had clients that have missed that, right? So they get, you know, revision 4, which is their quote, and then when they get the contract, they don't look to see that it's revision 6. And revision 6 has 8 more doors than the revision you bid off of. Correct. And if you gave a price for revision 4 and they're on revision 6, before you sign the contract, you need to say, I need to check revision 6 and I may need to give you another number.
Thanks for listening to the LeanZone.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or in your favorite podcast app. For articles, videos, and forums on this and other construction topics, head over to the LeanZone.com.